Autism is thought to affect four times as many boys as girls. But new research carried out at Great Ormond Street's Institute of Child Health found that girls with the condition who have a higher verbal IQ show fewer symptoms and fewer of the traditional signs of autism, like rocking or very rigid forms of behaviour. However, that doesn't mean the condition doesn't impact upon their lives. Our reporter Nadira Tudor met Nikki Clark. She has two daughters with autism. One is 12 and the other is 14. She's called Lizzie. Here she describes some of the names that she's been called.
Freak, strange, weirdo. They'd sometimes swear as well. I used to worry that I was being overly sensitive, you know, because so many people told me that I was being overly sensitive, and it just made me feel really bad.
So, if you could have a look in that cupboard for a little glass bowl.
Okay. I'm Lizzie. I'm 14 and I have autism. At my old school, I felt very, very different, really. That wasn't really helped by the fact that I was being bullied as well. When I was in year six, for example, I had a big group of friends. We were a bit rocky for ages, really, but then when they found out I had autism, they just sort of abandoned me, really. And they would call me horrible things. It was really harsh, I thought. I used to come home crying a lot. Yeah.
How's that, Mum?
Oh, lovely. Can you get
round? My name's Nikki Clark, and I'm mum to two girls, both on the autistic spectrum. Emily is going to be 12, she's 11 now, and she has autism, learning disabilities and epilepsy. And Lizzie, who's 14, has Asperger's syndrome, sometimes called high-functioning autism, mild Tourette's and dyspraxia. Emily was diagnosed first. Emily was only three when she was diagnosed because she had no spoken language. She'd had a few words and then they'd basically disappeared, so she became mute. And so we were concerned that perhaps she was deaf and her eye contact sort of had diminished to the point where she'd fixate just on a very small object or area. And she wasn't responding to her name. And she just seemed in a world of her own. And we were referred to the Child Development Centre, and over a period of weeks they assessed her and then they gave us the diagnosis. And with Lizzie, she was very verbal from an early age, very forward, very confident. And she was diagnosed at 10, coming into 11, with Asperger's syndrome. And with Lizzie, it was a lot more difficult. It was a more difficult process of diagnosis than it was with Emily, because it was less clear. And she had eye contact. I taught her to make eye contact, but there weren't the benchmark indicators that there were with Emily. And so it was more difficult, and that took about 18 months rather than 6 weeks.
Yeah. So now we've just got to tidy up. Oh, no, you can eat this bit. You've left a load in there, look.
I always knew I was different, and I couldn't work out why. But then I found out I had autism, and at first I was a bit upset because I thought it would make things worse. But then I realised that I'm going to have this for the rest of my life, so I might as well accept it.
Brilliant.
Can you understand why so many girls get misdiagnosed?
I think so. I think because girls internalise a lot of the problems that they're having. They don't present so much with the aggression that you might see in boys. I think because girls are conditioned to be more compliant, so there's an onus on them perhaps not to get angry and to conform, possibly more. I don't know, that's just my view. You know, if you've got a mindset that says we see it more in boys than girls, it's a male condition, that's possibly another reason.
I think it makes me special. I don't really think of it as a disability. I think of it as something that makes me who I am. I don't think I want to be like everyone else, really, now that I really think about it. I like being me. Mum, don't cry.
Sorry.
Mum.
You have done phenomenally well, Lizzie. I am very proud.
With Emily, she'll always live a life at the behest of other people. She'll be a little girl for the rest of her life. With Lizzie, she has more of a possibility for independent living, but she will live with us probably for a long time before. So we decided to extend so that they would have this unit. It's literally just a rectangular box on the side of the house, and the hope is that then we can have a unit for Emmy to have, and possibly for Lizzie, so that they can have a sort of semi-detached independent life, if you see what I'm saying.
Well, that was Nikki Clark talking to our reporter Nadira Tudor, and you also heard from her daughter Lizzie. Dr. Rebecca Chilvers is a psychologist who works in the Child Health Clinic at Greater Ormond Street Hospital. Rebecca, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Also here, Dr. Judith Gould, who's director of the National Autistic Society Lorna Wing Centre for Autism and is also a consultant clinical psychologist. Welcome to the programme. Thank you for coming in. Rebecca, can we start with you? How common is Nikki's story? What do you think?
Well, I think in terms of having more than one sibling in the family that's affected, that's quite common. We see that quite commonly. I think what's really interesting about this story is how long it took for Lizzie to have a diagnosis compared to her younger sibling, Emily. And we typically sometimes see this when there's a more severely affected sibling, and we get a comparison effect where the more mildly affected sibling isn't picked up very soon. And I was interested when... the mother was saying that it took 18 months for her to get a diagnosis, but also the fact that she's a girl, and I think that the point that, you know, the mum said it's a male condition, that autism often doesn't come into the minds of clinicians when they see girls.
Yeah, you'd echo that, would you?
I would absolutely echo it. Can I just say what an absolutely wonderful story, and what a typical story that is, where, as Rebecca said, you know, the late diagnosis is to do with the very narrow view of what autism is, the male stereotype. And, you know, we're getting there with training professionals to get understanding of the whole range of social manifestations rather than the very typical male type.
Right. Well, what are the criteria then when it comes to diagnosing autism in girls, and how are some of the signs being missed?
Well, if I may start, I think that the most important thing is that they can come across as being rather social and often, as we've said, Lizzie's very verbal, and I think that can then confuse and people get that wrong because they assume that they have an ability to be able to interact in an inappropriate way socially, and in fact that isn't the case. They really are covering their social difficulties.
Why are they able to do that?
Because I think they learn through their intellect rather than by intuition. So in fact, they lack that instinctive capacity to apply the rules appropriately in practice.
Can you give me an example of what might happen in a social situation?
Well, there may be a group of girls who are playing a particular game, and maybe they'll think, well, this is something that I watch very carefully, often very much on the periphery of things. Mm-hmm. And they're very, they're bright, so they're picking up. They know that there's something going on here that they should be doing, and they'll make that effort to watch and copy.
But they couldn't initiate it?
They often don't initiate it, yeah. Right. And then, of course, the other kids have moved on to something else, and they may be still stuck with that particular game.
So, Rebecca, I mean, this is, you're probably able to mask it at primary school level, are you, if you're a girl?
I think it's easier to mask it at primary school, partly because the environment you're in is more structured, and the social demands are somewhat less. But what's really interesting about girls, if you think back to the time that you were at school and we were all at school, just how complex the social demands are for girls. You get into cliques, you get into groups, there's very subtle subtext to conversations, there's a lot of sarcasm, and picking up those more subtle social cues is very difficult.
So girls get to secondary school, and then what happens?
Well, typically in the clinic at Great Ormond Street, what we saw is actually a number of girls came to our clinic because they'd actually gone to services because of anxiety and depression, because they just felt they couldn't cope, that they suddenly realised they were different and they didn't know why.
Yeah, I just wonder whether, Judith, labelling helps. I mean, Lizzie did say there that after she got the diagnosis of autism, her friends abandoned her.
I thought that was so sad, and this actually does happen.
Why label them then?
Well, I think it's terribly important to have a diagnosis rather than using the term label. Because if you don't have the diagnosis, then obviously you're not going to be able to access the help you need. I can give you two examples of two individuals we've seen recently, two young girls who are in secondary at A-level stage, where they really, where the parents were very aware that they were different and they were struggling socially. Academically, they're fine. Mm. Socially, they're struggling. And so the parents made the request for the referral to come to our service, which then happened. And when we saw the two individuals themselves, they were very reluctant to have a diagnosis. Now, what we do in those cases, we respect that. But what we say is, we will write recommendations to the school to explain the needs of the individual, but we don't necessarily have to put a label on it.
Okay, and their friends don't need to know.
Their friends don't need to know. Definitely not.
Right.
I think that's important, partly because the term autism can have such negative associations.
Well, clearly it has. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in fact, one young girl we saw thought it was a disease when she first heard about it.
I mean, I should say, we don't want to restrict this just to young girls. I mean, there's an email that we've had in from a listener who we'll keep anonymous, but she says, autism spectrum disorder was only printed on my forehead 3 months ago, and I'm 56.
Yes.
Mm. I'm delighted to now say I'm a person with Asperger's, the current term to describe high-functioning autism. Mm. I have been unrelenting in my pursuit to find out why I feel so out of sync with the world around me. I never suspected my unique brain wiring.
Yeah.
This listener actually goes on to say that she's felt a certain amount of, well, not quite contentment, but a sort of resolution.
Yeah. I would definitely agree, because, I mean, we see a number of adults, in fact, we see more adults than we do children in our service now. And that sense of relief, you know, that immediate, maybe a little concern and shock of having a diagnosis, but usually sometime later, great relief of understanding why they've struggled all through their lives.
I mean, it really is common, is it, for women in their 50s and 60s to come?
We certainly do see people, yes.
Yeah.
And the helpline and National Autistic Society get many calls from older people wanting a diagnosis.
That actually is just incredibly sad, isn't it, Rebecca, that lives have been blighted by something?
Yes, I think that's true. I mean, I've seen several adults myself, and several of them have suffered throughout their whole life, just not really realising where they don't fit in, that they struggled with relationships and in their jobs. But I think that one individual I saw described quite eloquently having the diagnosis as lifting a veil of confusion, which has just covered their entire life.
So, I mean, just to end, what are we actually saying? Should we forget about this notion of autism being four times more likely in boys and begin to consider that, in fact, it might be equal across the sexes?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, in our clinical practice, we've noticed that the numbers of referrals of girls has really almost doubled in the last 3 years. And I think they've just always been there. It's just, you know, the lack of recognition of the different types of manifestations of the behaviours.
Well, thank you both very much indeed for coming in. I've no doubt there will be a response to that item, but thank you very much. Thank you. Dr. Rebecca Chilvers and Dr. Judith Gould. Now, if you would like more information about that subject of autism in girls, do call the BBC's Action Line. The number is 0800 044 044.